to Pink Door Culture Club, your eclectic entertainment guide. My name is Jeremiah Burns, and this is the second ever episode of Pink Door Culture Club. We're in season one. If you like it, please subscribe and share and like and all of those good things. The plan for each season is to have 10 episodes. We're going to explore movies, TV shows, music, and sometimes a book, a video game, a play. And I'm going to talk about each one of those as if you've already seen it. You're not worried about spoilers, so feel free to go ahead and look at pinkdoorcultureclub.com or on the Pink Door Culture Club Facebook page, because you can see the list of what we're going to cover ahead of time. You can read ahead, view ahead, listen ahead, and join in. You can also reach out to me via that Facebook page or pinkdoorcultureclub@gmail.com. And let me know if you've got some recommendations or feedback. It'd be great to hear from you. This week, we're looking at several records. So we're going to look at a couple of records from someone who's been described as a super musical cross between James Brown, Judy Garland, Andre 3000, and Steve Jobs. I'm talking about Janelle Monáe. Janelle Monáe, if you haven't heard of her, you're not familiar with her, is an American funk, soul, R&B singer. She goes beyond that, but funk, soul, R&B is kind of her home ground along with R&B. She's also a filmmaker and an actor and a writer, and she's originally from Kansas City. You might know her from a couple of the movies that she's been in, if you're not familiar with her music, especially most recently, The Glass Onion, which is the follow-up to Knives Out, where she plays Andy. So her first three records, they're a set of concept albums. One's an EP and then the two albums, and they all deal with the same fictional world, and she's inhabiting the same alter ego across the three records. So there's the Chase Suite, Metropolis, the Chase Suite from 2008, which got a Grammy nomination, which is great for a debut record. The Arc Android from 2010, which got two Grammy nominations and 8.5 from Pitchfork, and was listed at number 12 on the Rolling Stone Greatest Concept Albums. Just behind Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. And then The Electric Lady, her second album from 2013, which got an 8.3 from Pitchfork. Okay, so the first segment of Pink Door Culture Club is called Spellbound, where we think about what makes this music from Janelle Monáe so interesting and engaging. And there's two big things, I think. So one of them is the musical and lyrical range on these records, across these three records. So I'm just going to work through some of the genres that you find across these records, within and across these records. So there's a lot of what you would call funk music, and Janelle Monáe definitely talks a lot about, you know, being inspired by funk artists. And if you listen to Metropolis on a track like Sincerely Jane, if you listen to Arc Android, tracks like Dance or Die, or the really famous one, which is Tightrope, or on Electric Lady, she has a collaboration with Prince called Giving Them What They Love, which you can't listen to on Spotify, but you can on Tidal, or Queen, the track called Queen. You're really hearing her funk talent, I guess, and her ability to be an amazing funk artist. And her influences are people like George Clinton, who were really experimenting and pushing the boundaries of funk music. Another genre that you'll hear from her is hip-hop. So on the Arc Android album, there's a remix of Tightrope featuring B.O.B. and Lupe Fiasco, where you hear great hip-hop from them. But also great rapping from her, like an extended rap from her, which is great. And on Electric Lady, the track Queen finishes with a kind of big rap from her as well. And she cites Lauryn Hill as one of her strong influences. The other influence you can hear in her hip-hop music is Southern hip-hop, especially Outkast. So if you listen to Tightrope, which features Big Boi, who's one of the artists from Outkast, or on the Metropolis record, Many Moons, you'll really hear that kind of Outkast Southern hip-hop vibe in her music. She's also covering R&B and soul. Like, she has these soaring ballads, especially on the Electric Lady album. So Prime Time is a really famous track. It's Code, What an Experience. These are like really soaring, heartfelt ballads in a kind of R&B soul style. And then you get into genres where you're just not kind of expecting it. You're kind of expecting the funk and the hip hop and the R&B and the soul. Then she will go into what you could only describe as kind of almost jazz singing. So on the Arc Android, there's a track called Ba Bop Ba Ya, which goes for 8 minutes and 47 seconds. And it's got these kind of lush orchestral strings. I would only describe this as jazz singing, really. On the same record, she strays into territory that I would describe as like almost like folk music on a track called 57821. Like, if I was listening to that track without knowing it was her or it was someone who was an R&B soul funk singer, I wouldn't know at all. And it almost sounds like some kind of futuristic Simon and Garfunkel folk music when I listen to it. She also goes into kind of orchestral and operatic music as well. So the way that she's structured the albums is in what she calls various suites. So there's five musical suites, and the beginning of each of those suites across the two albums anyway starts with a suite overture where you've got, it's kind of classical mixed with a bit of lounge and jazz type music, and it's just the music. But then if you look at or you listen to a track on Metropolis called Cybertronic Purgatory, it's just kind of opera. She's just kind of singing opera across those classical sounds. And then there are a few more experimental vocal or instrumental tracks as well. So on the Arc Android, particularly one that stands out is called Neon Gumbo. So just to read that list back to you, like across these albums, you're getting a lot of funk, you're getting a lot of hip hop within those tracks, you're getting R&B and soul, especially these amazing ballads, you're getting a little bit of jazz, a little bit of folk, a little bit of orchestral music with opera, and then also some experimental vocal and instrumental tracks. So covering a lot of territory, which makes it really interesting to listen to. It's coherent, right? But it's so varied, which makes it really engaging. Like overall, I mentioned some of her influences as I was going through the different styles, but someone who she was a really close friend with was Prince. And you do get that, you really do hear that influence, that soul R&B experimental kind of influence. There are other moments where I actually stopped listening to some of her tracks on the Arc Android and cut over to the Off the Wall album by Michael Jackson, and it was so similar. So that early Michael Jackson sound, the Off the Wall album, maybe bits of Thriller, very kind of similar sounding. And she's even channeling a little bit of Madonna, the Vogue track in particular. So a strong influence there from Prince, along with Lauryn Hill and Outkast, George Clinton, and others that I've listed off. So that's one of the things that makes it really interesting. And the other thing that makes these works really interesting is her alter ego and the world building that she does around that. So across the EP and the two albums, she presents herself as Cindy Mayweather, Android 57821. And she's drawing heavily here on a film called Metropolis from 1927, which is a super famous science fiction film, which is about this sort of utopian overworld that has an oppressed underworld, and there needs to be a reconciliation between the two via a mediator. She's probably also drawing on Blade Runner, which is dealing with some similar themes. So it's this sort of dark world, and there's this alter ego that she's inhabiting of an android, which, you know, fits with the robot or cyborg character from Metropolis and some of the characters in Blade Runner. So in that character that she's inhabiting, there's a forbidden love. She's fallen in love with and run away with a human, Anthony Greendown. And the way that this story is told is really interesting. It's told through the songs, sometimes like really explicitly, other times indirectly. But there's also these interludes. So her EP, Metropolis, starts with what is called March of the Wolfmasters, which is this really cheery call to go out and hunt down and kill Cindy Mayweather because she's run away with Anthony Greendown. So you kind of get that setting the scene for her EP. And then when you get to The Electric Lady, the second album, there's these interludes of like a radio talkback show where people are calling in and talking about parties they're going to and whether cyborgs can come or whether humans are allowed, and the speculation about Cindy and where is she and what is she up to. And then she complements all of that with her really distinct costume and fashion. Her big thing is the tuxedo, and you see that in her cover art. You see that in her music videos. And when you get to her music videos, it's not just her costume and her fashion, but she's doing really interesting things to reinforce this science fiction world that she's inhabiting. So the Tightrope video, for example, is set in this kind of asylum that has outlawed dancing, but she's breaking out with other patients to dance, and there's a very strong James Brown kind of feel to the way she's dancing. And then on The Electric Lady, in the Queen video, she's part of a museum of like famous time travelers who then like come to life in the museum and, of course, like dance and sing and are really entertaining. And then all of that is sort of structured and consistent within these recordings, but also across the albums and across these different media. So I think the combination of all of these genres with this alter ego that's really strong and all the world building that she's doing around it make it so interesting and engaging. The second segment of Pink Door Culture Club is called Rear Window, and the plan is to kind of like dive a little more deeply into the meaning of the music and what's going on sort of below the surface, I guess. One of the interesting things with Janelle Monáe as an artist is she had something of a difficult upbringing, according to her account, in Kansas City. And she talks about how that really fueled the desire to create, or the need to create, a fantasy world so that she could escape. So I think there's something interesting there about having a difficult and constrained upbringing and the way that can unleash this desire for creativity and escape and world building, like I mentioned before. I think an interesting question or consideration when I listen to Janelle Monáe and watch her is like the conflict or the tension, I guess, between range and experimentation and like focus and personal brand. like, there is sort of some discussion about whether, like, why is she not more popular and why is she not more commercially successful? But she's pushing so hard, so quickly on so many different fronts in terms of, like, expressive style and content and topics that she wants to cover that, you know, it's kind of, there is a brand there around Cindy Mayweather and there is a focus there, but it's also just so expansive that it makes me think about how that has a cost, I guess, that goes with it. It also makes me think how unusual it is to have a sustained piece of art that's requiring you to sit down or asking you to sit down and, like, listen to the entire album and also consider the art across multiple mediums. Like, in a TikTok kind of culture where, like, everything's instant and you're just listening to the best single from the biggest artist this week, this is kind of quite different. Long albums, longer albums that have videos that all tie in across multiple years and multiple mediums, I think is really interesting, but perhaps brings with it some cost. I think another interesting thing to consider with Janelle Monáe is the power of the alter ego and the way it opens up new possibilities for artistic expression, like something obviously that, you know, David Bowie and the Beatles and George Clinton and heaps of others, you know, have experimented with, and Prince. For them, it feels like what they were doing is like getting stuck in at a certain point artistically, and then they were like, okay, I'm going to create this alter ego so I can go over here and do something different. For her, she's starting out her career with an alter ego, which is really interesting. Like, don't get to know me as Janelle Monáe and then I'll create the alter ego. Here I am. I'm Cindy Mayweather. So that's an interesting place to start. And I think one of the things that the alter ego and the alternate world does is sort of add layers or possibilities when it comes to meaning as well as expression. Like, for her, it's like, what does the cyborg represent, you know, and lets her talk about class and race and gender and sexuality, or raise those questions. And sometimes it's really obvious, and other times she's able to layer those things up. I think another thing that I think about when I'm listening to all of these works from her is the power of science fiction as a form for exploring ideas. Alan Finkel, the chief scientist of Australia, is really big on, like, leaders in any society need to read science fiction, and it's like a super technology in itself because it lets us think about what could be and what's different and all of that. And for Janelle Monáe, she's really exploring, like, what constitutes a human being. So she's picking up on that sort of question that you see in Blade Runner and Stepford Wives and AI and Battlestar Galactica and Ex Machina. Like, what is it that makes someone a human or acceptable as a human being? And she's exploring alternate futures and tapping into a tradition that has been called Afrofuturism. So kind of exploring African stories and possibilities through science fiction, which, you know, I guess it's always thinking forward and saying, like, how will this turn out for good or for bad? And as part of that, I think it's interesting to see what she's doing and what science fiction is often doing when it thinks about the role of authority within society. You know, what's permissible? Who decides that? How is transgression dealt with in society? And it's often like a negative portrayal. So with her art, the authorities are, like, you know, sending out the killers to hunt down Cindy Mayweather in Metropolis. Authority is bad in Blade Runner. You know, Tyrell Corporation is evil. Same in The Hunger Games. Same. I'm watching Andor at the moment, which is really great sci-fi, actually. A Star Wars show, if you're not familiar with it. And, you know, there, it really shows you why the Empire is so hated. I think it does a great job of portraying that. It kind of raises the question for me of, like, is there such a good thing is there such a thing as good authority? Like, what makes for good authority? Because the call in these shows and in this artwork from Janelle Monáe is often to do with revolution and change and turning things over. And, like, I'm interested in what does that offer? What are the benefits of that? But what doesn't it solve as well? It's interesting listening to a podcast called The Rest is History, and to hear them exploring the French Revolution or the Cultural Revolution, and just how bloodthirsty and violent and awful those revolutions were, gives you some pause for thought when you're thinking about turning everything over and starting again, and the limits of revolution and change, I guess. You know, I think it feels like for Janelle Monáe that the goal, and often in all of these stories, not just hers, but in all these stories, the goal seems to be more individual freedom. So that kind of raises the question of, like, again, like, what are the benefits of that? What are the limits to that? And is there a point at which total individual freedom means that creativity suffers or happiness suffers? Does creativity actually need some constraint? And, you know, does happiness actually need some boundaries and constraint is an interesting question. And just a final thing within all of the science fiction thinking is, you know, I think Janelle Monáe is really tapping into that power of the mediator or savior narrative for a broken world. So in The Electric Lady, when people are calling in to the radio station, there is sort of speculation that Sidney Mayweather is a kind of messiah, you know, like she's the arch android. She's this lover, this rebel, this inspirational figure. And, you know, that's all lots of fun, but I think kind of taps into that long history of the need for a mediator, some desire we have for that, which you see, you know, you see it in The Matrix with the character of Neo. You see it in religion, you know, with the person of Jesus coming and claiming to be that mediator, to be that savior. So yeah, there's some, like, thoughts around Janelle Monáe's work, the power of a difficult upbringing, the tension between range and focus, the power of the alter ego, and then the power of science fiction as a form for exploring ideas. The final segment of Pink Door Culture Club is called The Man Who Knew Too Much, where I just list off some other interesting stuff I discovered when preparing for this podcast, or I quiz my guest if I've got a guest. So some interesting things with regard to Janelle Monáe and her work is she grew up watching The Twilight Zone. I have never seen an episode of The Twilight Zone, and I feel like that was well before my time, but I'd like to go and watch a couple episodes. It's influenced so many people, like Spielberg, etc. Janelle Monáe bought two copies of The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill with her first paycheck. I don't know why she needed to, but, like, that's how much she loved it. And she then did Lauryn Hill songs in various talent quests early on as she was practicing and, you know, honing her skills. She was accepted into drama school in New York City. But it's interesting, she dropped out because she was like, you know, I don't want to just be playing these characters that other people have played and other people will play and just repeating the same old thing again. And as you would have heard earlier in the podcast, she's definitely not doing that. She is pushing as hard as possible on as many fronts as possible to avoid that, but has ended up doing a lot of acting as well. When she was in drama school, an interesting thing is that she was working at Office Depot to sort of, you know, pay her bills, and she got an email from a fan to her Office Depot email address, and she replied, and they fired her for that. No wonder she has a negative view of authority. She just replied to one email and got fired. She gave the first copy of the album, The Ark Android, to Prince with some flowers and a handwritten track list. So that's cool. And you can go online and see she performed. She was one of the main performers at the Prince tribute concert, or one of the big Prince tribute concerts. So there was definitely a strong connection there. You probably have heard Janelle Monáe on other things. She's the guest vocalist for the track We Are Young by the band Fun, and got 3 Grammy nominations as part of that, and has had 8 Grammy nominations in total. So like one of the questions is like, how come she hasn't landed one of these? You know, she needs to be more recognized as part of the Grammy Awards. I mentioned before that she was in The Glass Onion, and you will see her in all sorts of other movies, particularly in 2016 as she kind of started in bigger movies. She was in Moonlight and also in Hidden Figures, and has been in other things since then. Okay, so that's the second ever episode of Pink Door Culture Club. I hope you liked it. Remember, I'm going to publish the season's recommendations ahead of time so you can follow along. You can find them at pinkdoorcultureclub.com or on the Pink Door Culture Club Facebook page. You can be in touch with me via that Facebook page, or you can email me at pinkdoorcultureclub@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.